This story was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. If you have a retirement account, an IRA, and it's not in Bitcoin, maybe think about rolling it over to an Unchained IRA. Bitcoin's the best money. You want your long-term retirement savings in the best money. Unchained makes that possible. Go to unchained.com/RHR. Check out their calculator. Set up a call with their signature team. Roll that IRA over into Bitcoin and sleep peacefully. Unchained.com/RHR. This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip is also brought to you by CoinKite. CoinKite builds the best Bitcoin hardware in the world. If you're an individual, a business, you're looking to secure your Bitcoin with single sig, multi-sig, check out the suite of cold cards, the MK4, the Q. They're the most secure. They've got two secure elements. You can create your private public key pairs offline, and the device just keeps getting better. I love the Q. I use the Q. It's a great device. Use the code RHR for 5% off at checkout. Go to coinkite.com. Check out all their products, not just the MK4 and the Q. Check out the Block Clock, Sats Guard, Tap Signer. Check it all. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Let me see. Is the button? Did you name it?
I named it live from Bitcoin Park.
Okay, we're on the air. We're here.
Did I name it correctly?
Yes, you did. Live from Bitcoin Park.
Because we are live from Bitcoin Park.
We are. It's great to be back.
Tennessee is Bitcoin country.
America's Bitcoin country. The world is Bitcoin country.
What did you think about my conversation with the governor earlier?
I thought it was incredible. Very impressive, gentleman. And I was impressed with the research that you did. I was not expecting that in-depth research that you brought to the table.
My Governor Lee research?
Yeah. You know how many generations his family's been here?
It was the first research I've done on an interview since I started, like 8 years ago or whatever.
And I was very happy you helped me dodge a bullet there.
How?
Because I can't pronounce nuclear, right?
He was so proud of himself, too.
Nuclear. I always, whenever I say nuclear.
Ever since George Bush fucked it up, it's haunted me. And I was kind of young at that moment. But I was like, never again. Just don't say the word.
Yeah.
Try not to say it into a mic.
Nuclear. Nuclear.
It's nuclear.
Nuclear. That's I have to work on it. That's mentally. Because this is a big topic of conversation. I bring
it
up on the podcast.
He said it like six times in like five minutes. He said it right every time.
So we're here live from Bitcoin Park at the Nashville Energy and Mining Summit. Third or fourth annual?
Third annual.
Incredible event.
Full house.
Most high signal Bitcoin mining event. Actually, the door, there's people out. The door is open and people are climbing to get in here. But
lower your time preference, people. There's plenty of space. You can get in.
Do you have a list?
I don't have a list.
What do you think about mempools on this?
I was too busy preparing for the governor conversation. And we have Paul here, who's our local producer. And Paul, I gave Paul about 2 hours notice that this was going to be live. And then we have Logan, who has not been replaced by an H-1B yet, who's doing remote production.
Not yet. Not yet, Logan.
So that's fantastic. So we got the double production going on. Mempools have not cleared yet.
Have you been spamming the mempool? That's my question.
I have not, but I do transact. Like, I think what most people don't realize is I would love to have cheap fees for a little bit longer. The longer, the better. But I also think people should prepare for situations where we could be in a sustained high fee market for a long period of time and a period of time where mempools do not clear. I think at some point we hit adoption where they just will not routinely clear and they might never clear again.
Eventually, always.
Eventually, always is wrong. Like, you know you're wrong. I saw you, your provocative Noster post where you're like, eventually, always, mempools clear. You know that's wrong.
Did you appreciate
right?
the all caps?
You know that's incorrect, right? I did appreciate it all caps.
It's yet to be determined.
Personally. I took it personally because I knew it was directed at me. You could just send me a text. You can just send me a text.
I was in a trolling fashion.
You don't have to sign the note and broadcast it to the world to send me a message. Like, you could just send me a text. We're actually in person together. You could have just told me face to face.
I didn't see you last night. I sent that last night. I got here late.
Or you could have waited 8 hours and then told me in person. I do want to, like, can we just take a moment, an obituary, if you will, just to, like, reflect on the panic in the early ordinals period? Where yes. people wanted to rush through Bitcoin protocol changes.
Yes. Actually, it's funny. I won't...
Because mempools are too busy, and here we are right now.
It's actually really funny that you bring this up, because last night in the Austin airport, on my way here, I think he'd be fine with me saying this. I ran into Mike Schmidt from Brink. He was traveling to another location, and our gates were right next to each other. He was standing at the bar. I was like, hey, Mike, nice to talk to you. For those who are unaware, Mike Schmidt is the co-founder of Brink, which is trying to fund open source development of Bitcoin. And we talked about exactly this panic that ensued when Ordinals launched, mempools were full and fees were high. And the conversation, the way Mike describes it, there was this FOMO in the developer community that if we don't get these protocol changes in, the ability for something like shared UTXO ownership or more scaling bandwidth within blocks is never going to present itself again. And I think, as you're describing, that panic may be unwarranted when it happens. So cool heads should prevail when mempools do get full and fees goes up.
I mean, I think it also goes both ways though too, right? Like, I think we will be in a situation where we start to see a sustained high fee market where it won't be panic-led development, but it will be pressure-led development where there's actually pressure to have better tools and better tooling in order for people to more cost effectively and more conveniently move funds on chain, right? And until you have that kind of pressure, it's hard to imagine any kind of substantial changes happening because there's just no motivation for that to happen, right?
Well, that I think another important thing to take into consideration is we learned this Taproot. We were big Taproot cheerleaders. I was, at least personally. Maybe I won't put that.
You were the big Taproot cheerleader. Real quick, is Paul still here? Paul, which camera?
I think it's this one.
Is this one? Okay. Continue Taproot cheerleader.
I was a Taproot cheerleader. I went through that on you. And the emergence of ordinals, inscriptions, many would argue, is a byproduct of Taproot getting merged. And I did not foresee that possibility.
It's all your fault.
Partly my fault. No, I don't know.
I was more of a Taproot denier, if you recall. Like, I was just, it's not going to get merged.
Yes.
I lost 1 million sats to open source contributors over that.
Yeah. But I think one thing when it comes to future soft forks, potentially opcodes, covenants, whatever people want, I think there needs to be a clear sort of reason to do it. And that reason, I would argue, is something that has proven product market fit and has some limitations.
How do you prove product market fit if it requires a soft fork?
Well, what I'm getting to is something like Arc, which...
You've become a big Arc cheerleader.
I like Arc.
You're just a cheerleader, man.
I'm not a cheerleader.
Someone tells you
I've used it. I've seen it.
Dude, you said... You sent out a hype post about Web5 after they fired the entire Web5 team.
Web 5 is still open source. If anyone wants to go pick up that database, shout out to Daniel. I've had a conversation with him about it. But no, Arc, I think seriously, when you consider how it can interplay with the Lightning Network, Cashumans, did you see what Alex Berg was posting about how to recover?
He started using Nostr again, which I was very
combination,
proud of him.
It's like combining Arc, Lightning, Nostr, and Cashew. Like you're beginning to see this scaling, sort of these scaling puzzle pieces come together.
No, and I think Arc is promising.
Thank
I
you. Think,
but you're also a cheerleader.
No, I've seen it. I've used it.
I don't know if you actually did.
Matthew, what do you think about Arc? Does it excite you at all?
We can't yeah. hear him. He doesn't have a mic.
He's seen it too, he said.
But yeah, Matt's opinion is way more qualified than your opinion. So him being
that's why I asked Arc him. That's why I asked him.
Matt runs our bit devs here in the great state of Tennessee in Nashville.
So point being, if Arc proves to have value and is adding value to Lightning Network, QNOS or whatever it may be, and it hits limitations that could be relieved by something like Covenants.
Yeah, that is a cool one because there's a way to implement it without a soft fork, and then there's a way to better implement it with a soft fork. So you kind of get to test it out.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you can also test things out on Liquid. Because like no one uses it, might as well just use it as a testnet.
Well, you're gonna piss a lot of people off.
You can test it out in a various. You could test it out on testnet or signet or some shit.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, I think product market fit, and if you hit limitations, then have the conversation.
But I do feel like it goes like, it's just rough. Like it's they call it rough consensus for a reason, right? Yes. I mean, and if you so like Arc, for instance, is a VC backed. Company, right?
Arc Labs. I don't.
It's confusing.
I think Second
Wasn't
may
there
have
like
some seed investors. There was, yeah. I don't think.
But my point is, it's a bit of a chicken and the egg because I know, like 1031, like we will not invest in anything that requires a soft fork.
Yeah, but it technically doesn't require a soft fork. Maybe.
Well, we didn't invest in Arc.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's interesting. I think it's important. I mean, the people working on it, where it's Tiero. For Kevin Ruse and the team at Second, really impressive engineers who have a lot of experience in Bitcoin, and they know more about the technical side than I do. So,
raise your hand if you've used Arc in this room. Okay, so we got two people out of like 300.
Do you want to talk DeepSeek? This is energy.
Yeah, let's talk DeepSeek.
This has been the big story this week. What are your thoughts?
I think the Chinese are definitely lying about how much it costs.
Agreed there.
It's like the easiest PSYOP in the world. And the U.S. capital markets are so fragile that all it takes is like the littlest lie, the easiest lie ever, and they just all rush into panic. I think also based on the timing, you can see that based on the timing too. Like they intentionally released it. And the news, they released it like Friday after markets closed.
And 2 days after Trump had that big meeting.
So you can have
Sam,
like the longest period of panic possible leading into the markets opening up. I do think there is, you know, the conclusion, though, is correct, probably, that there's just a gross capital misallocation in terms of the AI space. And that a lot of these things commoditize in a big way and that open source provides a lot of competition on that front. I mean, I think one of the things people don't realize is DeepSeek itself as a model is open source. DeepSeek, the app you download, is going straight to CCP servers.
Yes, those beware. Are
two different things.
Beware.
But it's also another, I think, a perfect example of where you can monetize and build on top of open source tools, where like anyone can go and self-host it, right? But let's be honest, the overwhelming majority of people are going to use like the nice polished app that you download from the App Store.
Yeah. Maybe it's a stretch to say that it's quickly become consensus over last week, but I think the idea that the model training and the models themselves will be completely commoditized is people are beginning to believe that more strongly, particularly after DeepSeek, which gets to what are the viable products, the wrappers, the UIs on top of these models. And as it pertains to 1031, the open secret, previously the Mutiny team, they launched Maple AI this week publicly, which is a cool example of this.
Because they're built on top of Llama, right? Which is
they're using Llama 3.5. I sat down with them in Texas yesterday, and they're exploring DeepSeek. But I think this is an example of an innovation that's going back to DeepSeek. When you use that, your information, when you use their app, it's going back to the CCP. I think what the Open Secret team with Maple AI is doing with the Nitro enclaves to make sure that not only the transmission of data is ended encrypted, but the actual like pinging of the models is encrypted on the GPU as well, which gives the end user incredible privacy.
Well, I mean, like the other piece here in, are we an AI podcast now?
It's the topic of the week.
The other piece here on the AI hype cycle is Goose from Block.
Yep.
Which is an open source agent that you can run locally with any model, which I think is pretty massive.
Yeah.
And relatively easy to work with, quite performant. So that does, you do start to question, it's like, okay, then where is vendor lock-in? Like Salesforce, for instance, wants to lock you into like a massive SaaS relationship where you pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year as a big corporation to manage all your agents. You know, if you have things like Goose out there and you can just run those locally or hire some smaller purveyor that is doing that hosting for you, and management for you, then maybe there isn't that much of a market in that field.
Yeah. And I remember why I brought this up to tie it to what we're talking about this week, which is the energy. Like, I think that has been the big theme. I mean, in the last 2 years, the race by these large artificial intelligence companies trying to train their models to get access to energy, spin up their data centers, has been a massive race. Like we mentioned, Trump literally had Sam Altman, Larry Ellison, Masa.
Lauren Sanchez.
Lawrence, who's that?
Bezos's wife. Okay. Yeah, are they married? I don't know if they're married.
I think it's girlfriend.
Right? Girlfriend.
You threw me off. But they were talking about, she throws a lot of people off, particularly Mark Zuckerberg.
I think that was a sign. Wait. No, I think that was a psyop too. I think his PR people told him, catch a look. You need to make sure the camera sees you get a look. Make him feel human.
I thought I had a tinfoil hat. but $500 billion investment. And that's a trend that will be interesting to watch play out, because it's been very obvious if you're in the mining industry, there's been very high competition for power purchase agreements and access to electricity between Bitcoin miners and AI companies looking to train their models. And is this DeepSeek shot across the bow, the potential recognition that the model training will be commoditized, does that change the calculus of the competition between miners and artificial intelligence moving forward? I don't know. Just thought I'd bring it up.
I'm going to stay humble and stack sats about it.
Does anybody have any opinions here?
They don't have microphones.
No. We can relay.
So they don't have opinions.
Yeah. All right. On from being artificial intelligence experts to Czech politics experts in central banking.
Well, before we're Czech politics experts, because I just saw who walked in. Did you see that a future bit Apollo mined a solo block yesterday live from Bitcoin Park?
I did. I was actually about to take off on my flight when I saw the hoopla.
How insane is that?
It's pretty insane. I was telling Rod right before, and I was talking to other people in the other room this morning
Rod
about it.
Rod isn't in here supporting us for what it's worth. Just I want the entire live stream to know. Continue.
You know me. I'm a man of faith, man. It's almost like God noticed what was going on. I was like, here's a little block for you guys. Here's a little ripple in the universe. It's pretty incredible. You're literally on this live stream for 8 hours. Probably thinking in the back of your head, it's like unlikely that we mine a block, and then like hour.
It was
eight.
Incredibly unlikely.
Yeah.
A lot of miners donated hash rate. I think they were near one exahash. So it was not nothing. It was probably the most hash rate ever directed at a future bit. I think we can probably safely say that so far yet. But it was still incredibly lucky, you know, in terms of miner luck that it happened.
Yeah.
And I mean, even to the point where Rod wasn't in the room, like if you go back and watch the live stream, he walks back in the room. And he thinks it's an elaborate prank on him. He thinks they're running like a modified version of Mempool Space, that they're showing him a fake block, because that is way more likely than it actually happening live on air.
Yeah. Again,
Pretty cool. History was made.
Little divine intervention.
These exact seats.
I think that was God saying, hey, you guys are working on the right thing. Here's a block.
Anyway, all that money just went to the 256 Foundation, which is spearheaded by Rod and Econo Alchemist.
Yeah.
So it'll go towards open source mining initiatives, which is really great to see.
Yeah. Shout out to Eco Scott from BitX. You guys are crushing it. I saw we have a hydro-cooled BitX in the other building. That was cool to see.
Yeah, which seems like overkill, but I'm cool with it. So do you want to be a Czech expert now? Or?
You were the one describing yourself as a Czech politics expert earlier today.
When Marty walked in this morning, I was talking with our good friend Ted, and I was like, we're all Czech politics experts now, because I guess today they're voting on strategic Bitcoin reserve?
Up to 5%. I think the most profound aspect of this headline, this story, is the fact that the head of the central bank itself, his name is escaping me, is the one pushing.
You don't remember his name?
No.
Does anyone here remember?
I just heard it for the first time yesterday before I became a Czech politics expert. But no, it is profound. I mean, it's profound for two reasons. You have the head of a central bank openly exploring the potential of allocating up to 5% of the Czech central bank's reserves to Bitcoin. For those who may not remember earlier, I think it was like within the last month or two, they changed the capital gains taxes. If you hold Bitcoin for longer than 3 years within the Czech Republic, you don't pay capital gains taxes. So that's
nice.
A signal that they're open to Bitcoin. And then boom, you have the head of the central bank saying we are going to vote on, and I believe it's similar to what's happening at the federal level here in the United States with the executive order, which is we're going to vote on whether or not we should explore allocating up to 5% of our assets in the
bank. Oh, it's not a vote to stack the sats?
I don't think so. No. It's exploration.
It's always hype. It's always hype bullshit.
Alice Mishy
is a man. Alice Mishy.
Yeah, and the second reason this is profound, because just earlier today, Christine Lagarde came out and proclaimed that no EU country will ever allocate the Bitcoin. And sort of, I would imagine that's a sort of shot across the bow from her to individual European Union member states. Like, don't mess with this.
Well, the Czech Republic's in the EU.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a little bit of a detente going on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so exciting.
The European Union, the governing body particularly, is addicted to losing. And so that is the big question in my mind moving forward. Like, do these individual states get fed up with Christine Lagarde, Ursula von der Leyen, and others, and just say, screw it, we're not listening to you anymore.
Dude, addiction's bad, but that's got to be one of the worst addictions.
Yeah, losing, being addicted to losing.
Yeah. It's not in the Eurozone. That makes a difference. I'm just repeating what I'm hearing in the crowd. They don't have the euro. They're not using the euro.
They have
their own money.
They're in the union. They're not in the zone. The zone is the economic agreement. The union is the. Yeah. Okay. So we're not Czech politics experts.
But fortunately. We have members of the crowd that are, so we got that going for us.
We should get Christian up here. He's a Czech.
No. He Googled it. So also not an expert.
Yeah, but it's still interesting.
I think the nation state FOMO is going to be really fun to watch.
It already is.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's just early days, right? It's you ain't seen nothing yet.
I mean, everybody's got a lot of catching up to do, particularly with Bhutan. We were talking about Bhutan earlier. I mean, the small kingdom in the Himalayas. I believe last we checked, it was like 7 million sats per citizen that they've accumulated via mining and outright buys. That's a pretty good stat.
I like that as a KPI. Except, you know, they're a monarchy, so like, I don't think it's like the king has the money.
Well, the king has the incentive to make sure the people are happy in some regards, unless you get George the Eighth, like monarch.
And the Bhutan thing is kind of fucked up because the only reason we know about it is from a chain surveillance firm, particularly a firm that convinces snitches to give them information and then they pay them shit coins. So it's like the bottom. It's like even worse than most chain surveillance firms. Yeah.
Arkham Labs.
Yeah.
Call them out. Yeah, it's the only reason. Who's snitching on them, though? It's like internal.
One of those Bhutan citizens that didn't think he was going to get his 7 million sats on him. One more, probably.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, too, the. I mean, we've discussed it recently, so we don't have to opine on it, but shout out to all the open source developers out there working on developer kits like PageWain developer kit that can help bork these chain surveillance heuristics.
And we have some BDK contributors in the audience today, which is awesome. Partially based out of Bitcoin Park.
Yeah.
Bitcoin developer kit.
It's a very important project. It's really unleashed the innovation in the space in the last few years.
We got 45 more minutes. I don't know what else you want to talk about.
We got, when we do these live episodes, we typically open up to the crowd, but I think I could think of one or two more.
We
got
to talk a little bit more first. We're professionals. We're supposed to talk. I got nothing.
You got nothing. Oh.
The conversation with the governor will be posted at a later date. It was recorded.
The biggest news of the week, I believe he's somewhere on the premise, but Pierre Rochard has threatened to audit the Ripple ledger.
That sounds like a special breed of masochism.
He's done it before. He's going to do it again. That's the big, I mean, money and politics, big conversation within the Bitcoin space in the United States is this.
I think it's mostly a distraction, but I think Ripple can go fuck themselves. I mean, yeah. Since our last conversation that we had last week, there's like, I was talking to someone who lives in DC, like they literally like have billboards, like all the billboards are Ripple billboards.
Really?
And they have like American flags and it's like Ripple is America. Ripple is freedom. Ripple
really?
Is sovereignty. Yeah. Like they're going all out over there.
Yeah. Well, that's not a good sign for them because Austin was littered with NFT billboards for the better part of 2 years and none of the companies that were advertising.
Ripple is freedom. Yeah. Fuck Ripple. If you own Ripple, just sell your Ripple and buy Bitcoin.
Pierre's audit failed almost immediately because Ripple doesn't know where the first 32,000 blocks of its ledger are. So I think it's important for people to recognize too, Ripple co-founded by Jeb McCaleb, who was the previous owner of Mt. Gox before he handed it to Mark Karpeles, knowing, people are assuming that he knew it was a bit of an insecure exchange. And Jed himself, he's a top five scammer in the history of the space.
Yeah, he's up there.
Mt. Gox, Ripple, Stellar, anything else?
And like he's mostly got away with it unscathed, like even reputation, like no one knows who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Nailed it.
Got to know your history, freaks.
Definitely top five. Who else is in the top five?
Dan Larimer.
Yeah, EOS.
Vitalik.
He was more than just EOS. What was he also?
BitShares.
BitShares.
Steemit, right. Too, I think he did. BitShares, wasn't that the first attempt at a stablecoin?
EOS is one of the most valuable companies in the world.
Block One is the EOS, the equivalent of the Ethereum Foundation. Oh, yeah. EOS.
They're distinct and separate entities.
Yes.
Right, I forgot.
300,000 Bitcoin.
That's insane. Yeah. Fuck.
Who else is top five? Hoskinson?
You threw Vitalik in there?
Yeah. I mean, Ethereum just fell.
Dan Larimer, by the way, was the... That's who Satoshi was talking to when he said, if you don't understand it...
I don't have time. If you don't understand, I don't have time.
I don't know. Like, we just
too bad.
That quote. That was for Dan Larimer.
Yeah.
I don't remember the quote right now.
What is it?
Does someone remember the quote?
If you don't understand it, I don't have time to explain it to you. Sorry.
There you go.
Something like that.
Great quote. That was for Dan Larimer. And then Dan Larimer launched multiple scams and now has 300,000 Bitcoin. So I guess he took the advice well.
Yeah. MicroStrategy.
What about him?
Launched a preferred stock offering this week.
They named it Strike.
I know. Is that, what do we think?
I don't know.
Disclaimer.
I don't know. He does like holding domain names, so maybe he's just trying to hold tickers too.
This is an interesting development. I had Jeff Walton, aka Punter Jeff, on TFTC. We talked about this, but it seems like the preferred stock offering is simply an expansion of the avenues that MicroStrategy is trying to access capital to accumulate more Bitcoin. They're getting pretty creative with it.
I don't understand it. Can you explain it to us better?
I mean, they've had the convertible.
You have a whole podcast on this?
Not just the preferred stock offering. Honestly, we recorded the morning it launched and Jeff was a little, it was fresh news, so he's still trying to digest it. But the way, I mean, the way I believe Strike is a separate sort of vehicle to
the MicroStrategy vehicle, not the company Strike.
Yes. Yeah. STRK. I mean, it's obviously different terms. So it's preferred stock offering. It won't be as volatile as the common stock. It has a dividend attached, I believe 8%.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So it's targeting investors who don't want the volatility of the common shares, I believe, and want the stability of a potential income stream with the dividend.
Does it have to do with the debt in some way?
I don't believe so. It's separate from the convertible.
Okay, we're going to do a little bit of research, freaks, and we'll come back next week and actually explain what the fuck that is, because I still don't understand what it is.
I mean, it's similar like on the private market when you have preferred shares, you basically get first call on capital of a bankruptcy.
Where's the dividend coming from?
That's a great question.
We'll come back next week.
Yeah.
Next topic. Do we have another topic?
So I would imagine most people might have been for a Bitcoin strategic reserve, thinking it'll avoid a mandibles. I don't know if that's a true premise, but if it turns into a Bitcoin and shitcoin strategic reserve, does that accelerate?
So the question was, a lot of people were presumably supporting a strategic Bitcoin reserve because it could avoid mandibles. You heard of mandibles?
Great book.
but now that it might include Ripple and other shitcoins, could it hasten mandibles, and do those people no longer support it? And I'm going to go to you with the question, since you're such an established scholar and you've read the book. Do you know who the main character's name is?
Tom.
Okay, continue anyway. With your response.
I just think it's a complete distraction. Will it ever get through? I don't know. I think it would delay it if you had a portfolio of shitcoins alongside Bitcoin. If it was Bitcoin only.
It would delay mandibles?
Yeah, I think it's
sense. Why would it delay mandibles?
Because I think if you have a portfolio of Bitcoin and all the other shitcoins, people will look at that like non-seriously, like, I don't know. I'm thinking this is the first time I'm thinking through this.
But I think the U.S. government's insolvent, and basically the only shot in hell of digging ourselves out of that hole is probably to pile as much money as possible into Bitcoin and like try and print money and put it into Bitcoin, which is not what the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve is stated to do, particularly in Lummis's act, Senator Lummis's act. She wants to use established gold reserves, mark them up to market, and then sell some of them for Bitcoin. But I think you just go whole hog, print money, buy Bitcoin before the rest of the world figures it out. It's like it's our special American privilege, and there's like one shot we have to pull it off.
It's full on speculative tech blitzkrieg.
Probably the conviction to ever do that or ever go in hard is not there, and mandibles will probably happen regardless, I think. And to be clear, when I say mandibles, what I mean is the U.S. going through a hyperinflation event. And as the reserve currency, basically the rest of the world going through one as well at the same time, which would be quite brutal. And Bitcoiners would likely be scapegoated. But the benefit would be that if you did prepare your business or your family, would be much better situated to handle that kind of environment. That's probably going to happen. And the question is, how long does it take for it to happen?
Well, there's another path.
Is the million sack question.
There's another path.
What is the other path?
Bretton Woods 2.0, where you just get everybody to the table. You're like, hey, we're definitely not going to be able to pay this back. So let's work on an agreement here. Who wants what? You get it.
No, but that's just like a narrative thing. That's still basically effectively hyperinflation, right?
Potentially.
I think there's, look, it. If shitcoins are in the strategic Bitcoin reserve, or I guess is the strategic shitcoin reserve or whatever, the stockpile, the digital asset stockpile, it's like not the end of the world. Like they'll probably be weighted like Bitwise's thing, you know, so it'll be a smaller basket compared to Bitcoin. Like mostly will be Bitcoin. And the shitcoins will trend to zero. So then it'll all be Bitcoin eventually. And it just sucks to see like the same scammers over and over again, this time doing it on a way larger scale. Like that part sucks. But I mean, if you're in the space for long enough, like you kind of have to zone that out. Otherwise, you'll have like the most shitty, horrible life because it just happens over and over and over again. So you just try and focus on what you can control.
Yeah. But I think in the context of what we're doing, what everybody here is doing, like having the myopic focus on Bitcoin, the rest is all noise. I think we'll look up a decade or two from now and be very happy that we had this myopic focus on Bitcoin and just.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's strictly better for America if American politicians, regulators, business people, individuals are focused on Bitcoin and focused on accumulating as much Bitcoin as possible, focused on building sustainable, robust businesses, strengthening families, strengthening local communities. Like that's how America has the next great century. So as an American, that's what I want to see. As a disenfranchised Bitcoiner, that for better or for worse has found himself in an obligation to talk about Bitcoin once a week live on air. I really just don't give a shit. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Control what you can control.
Right? I'm not auditing Ripple's ledger. Like Pierre can do that. I'm not arguing against the Ripple heads. Did you see, Jack Mallers of Strike, the company, not the preferred stock, had a emergency press conference where he talked about,
He was sweating. He was sweaty during that emergency.
And it was very pro Bitcoin, very pro America. You like just got out of the sauna or something. Interesting style. I love it. And the Rippleheads like all were like just freaking out on him. Did you see that some guy did like a 25-minute
response? I did not see the 25-minute response.
I posted a notch. It's so good. It's just.
Wait. I thought you just said you weren't paying attention.
It's such a good response.
Which one?
Well, no, I can spectate, but I don't want to participate. You know, I'll watch the clown show all unfold.
Yeah.
You know, you turn your head on the highway when there's a car crash. You don't necessarily want to. You still turn your head. But my point is like there's just a lot of retarded people out there, and you just can't.
No, it's also tiresome.
You got to just focus on what you can control.
Yeah. That's why I love events.
You got to watch this 25-minute thing, though.
All right. So no, good. I'll go
watch like 5 minutes of it.
I'll watch it right after I read Mandibles.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
No, that's why I love this. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, up Rod's ass, Harry, Rob. This is the most high signal mining and energy event of the year, every year. And it's a great way to start the year for me personally, because getting in the room with all these people and being myopically focused on going an inch wide and a mile deep on energy in mining is one of my favorite things to do. And it really does give me a ton of hope that we are in the right direction, being here with people, the people that are in this room today. And with all the noise out there, it is easy to get distracted, but what really anchors me and gives me more confidence that we're going in the right direction as an industry is events like this.
Damn right. Huge round of applause for you people.
He just did the... Whenever... What was it, Riga? Every 5 minutes of Riga, you were Jack Dorsey. You're just like, everybody clap.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
It's gone to my head a little bit.
Should we open it up to more questions?
You just sit there. You just like, you give like a look and then you just go. Yeah, we could open up to
questions, topics.
But speak loudly.
In the back of the room behind you, he got his hand up first. Is the mempool going to click? Yes. Yes, it is.
He asked if the mempool is going to click. We already discussed this.
Eventually and always.
No, you're wrong about that. I don't even know how to phrase that bet, but you're definitely wrong about that. I'm going to put that, like, if I outlive you, it's going on the gravestone. Because it's just going to look so stupid in hindsight. Like in 40 years, like
I hope our
mempools will always clear.
I hope our relationship is such, if I pass away, your heart breaks and you die. It's like
Will. I will make you a custom tombstone. It's all love. Okay, next question. That was a shitty question. Can we have a better question?
Hey, there is no shitty question.
Mm-hmm. My question is, how likely come exchange it for dollars, or even worse yet, you know, the new U.S. dollar, which could be
Repeat the question.
So the question was about the executive order about strategic stockpile. And I think the phrasing in the executive order focus on the stockpile, and it explicitly does not say we're going to go out to the market and buy Bitcoin. Instead, it says we are going to seize Bitcoin as a stockpile. And does that open up the door for a potential 6102, like, well, yeah, or legal changes that get written in that say you can't use it as legal tender, so if you're using it, we can confiscate it. I'm not as worried because there's other language in the bill that pertains to the right to self-custody and the right to write code. I imagine it was just, it seems like a lot of some of the executive orders. I mean, we talked about the press conference with Altman, Ellison, Sam Armasa,
Lauren Sanchez,
and that seemed rushed. So I imagine it was just, I hope, could be wrong. Always have to be vigilant, but I'm not as worried about it.
So, I mean, he just made a point that they're not going to want to print. It's like because they don't want to destabilize the dollar, which, yes, it is a little bit of a Mexican standoff. Because you don't want to reduce faith in the currency. Obviously, then you'd have a massive, effectively like a run on the bank is how you can think about it. I think it's important for people to realize that executive order wise, the president is very limited on what he can and cannot do. There are ways for him to say we're going to wholesale buy Bitcoin. I think it's called the Exchange Stabilization Act or something. It gives him some leeway in terms of buying Bitcoin. Once again, I'm not a Czech political expert or a U.S. political expert, but he's mostly limited. Now, that specific executive order, you could tell that he pulled things from multiple different executive order proposals, including what came out of Bitcoin Policy Institute. So I'm one of the co-founders of Bitcoin Policy Institute. I'm one of the founding board members, to be clear. I don't really do anything day to day. I just support David Zell and Graham McCarthy and their wonderful team over there. And like we had executive orders in terms of self-custody and private Bitcoin usage that were separate. He like copied and pasted some of those paragraphs, put them in there. Some of the stockpile stuff like looked very similar to our strategic Bitcoin reserve executive order. And then he also like copied and pasted a bunch of crypto policy objectives and stablecoin objectives. So I think it was kind of, they were sitting there and like, they were like, how can we do an omnibus thing to satisfy the blockchain people? Which is probably exactly what they said in the meeting. And that was the product. And I think, you know, I think it was mostly positive if you look at it. He straight up said no CBDCs. Now, I think that's something we still need to pay attention to because it was also very pro stablecoin. And I think you end up in a situation where you have corporate USD tokens and through public-private partnerships, they basically effectively operate and do a lot of the dystopian shit that CBDCs would do without the baggage of calling them CBDCs. So that's something we have to continue to pay attention to. And I think, yeah, obviously this threat of a 6102 style confiscation is something that every Bitcoiner should have top of mind. You should be preparing yourself individually on a business sense, if you own businesses, on a family sense. I think it could also come from like different creative ways that don't necessarily look like a 6102, like unrealized cap gains tax or just high regular cap gains tax or onerous tax reporting requirements that are basically every transaction is surveilled, otherwise you're committing tax fraud. So there's a lot of different ways that P2P, freedom-oriented Bitcoin usage can be under pressure. But I would just reiterate that this time last year, in January, we were sitting here for last year's Nashville Energy and Mining Summit here at Bitcoin Park. And the direction it was looking like was that us and all of our friends were going to get sent to the gulags. And the direction right now is way, way, way brighter than that. Like we probably have never been in a better regulatory environment. except for the early days of Bitcoin when absolutely no one knew it existed. And that was just because of ignorance, and there's just no pressure and no focus on it. So I think in terms of Bitcoin in America and freedom money in America, Bitcoin as freedom money in America, like the future has never been brighter. I think we need to keep our foot on the gas and stay aware and keep our heads on a swivel, but pretty much very overwhelmingly positive vibes and policies kind of coming out of this current administration.
Yeah, and to build on that point too, going back to your question about do they want to seize, because if they go out and buy, they'll create the perception that they don't view the dollar as a, or treasuries as a secure reserve asset. And I think they should be strategic about that and approach that with extreme caution, as because treasuries underlie the whole banking system. If there was a collapse in confidence on that, that would be a very terrible situation for the banks and anybody who uses them. But to build on Matt's point,
all the banks are insolvent.
Like, I think the best strategy, if they were thinking of 3D, 4D chess, whatever you wanted to call it, was just let the Bitcoin economy flourish in the United States. Make sure you enshrine the right to self-custody and the ability to transact P2P. Hopefully get some more favorable tax policy when it comes to capital gains tax and the ability to transact in Bitcoin. And then just let the market do its thing and let individual Americans accumulate Bitcoin. And you don't even have to go out and create a strategic reserve at the federal government level. You essentially just do it at the individual, the company, the state level. And if at some point down the future, you do have a collapse in treasury markets and the dollar system, the effects on the American populace and the American economy aren't as bad because individuals, companies, and others have already adopted Bitcoin and have the safety net at their facilities.
Well said. Next question. I have a microphone now. You have to talk into the microphone.
Mr. Clear.
Oh, he's being the microphone jockey. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Paul here. Can we just shout out to Paul? He just walked in with just a perfectly sliced steak and salt on it to continue to produce the production.
The mic is not working. Not working. Just go back to what.
Given the fact he's got to use the mic.
All right.
Paul, can we get a huge round of applause for Paul?
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
How about, hey, let's not forget about him back in Austin. Let's give one for Logan, too. Okay. We got two producers on the show right now.
Check. All right.
There we go. See, it's beautiful.
Given that we're not going to the gulags now, right? The 1,000-pound gorilla is not on our back, regulatory. Given the opportunity here, what specific freedom tech projects or tech stacks or whatever do you see as like all gas, no brakes to create this technical freedom renaissance, not only here in the US, but across the world?
Nice.
You want to go first?
See, we don't have to repeat the question. Is that nice?
That's great.
I'll just keep it brief. I'm very excited about Cashew and I'm very excited about Nostr. To me, those two projects are the only projects I've seen with such organic, viral developer attention as Bitcoin when I first discovered Bitcoin. So it's really cool to see. It's not top down. It's very much grassroots on both those projects. I think they complement Bitcoin incredibly well. They're both open protocols like Bitcoin is, right? Bitcoin's an open protocol for money. Cashew is an open protocol for Bitcoin banks, and Nostr is an open protocol for speech and communication. And I think all of them together really, really complement each other and is like this freedom tech tool set. And we should use this opportunity to realize that, you know, who knows where we're going to be in 5 years, 6 years, 10 years in terms of regulatory environment and government pressure. And let's seize the moment and take advantage of it. And even if that wasn't the case, I'm very much of like an all gas, full send, let's fucking go kind of guy. So we should do that regardless.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say Cashew too. Maybe I should have went first. So I'm not just like repeating it, but no, Cashew.
You gave it to me.
E-cash mints in general, I think. the efficiency, the privacy benefits, and the way in which they create this free banking system that Hal Finney talked about in December of 2010 on top of Bitcoin is extremely exciting. As Matt said, the innovation around that protocol over the last year or 2 years has been extremely exciting to watch play out. And I think when it comes to actual innovation, and I think it is something that this administration will potentially have to confront at some point, is it is innovative banking tech in terms of the privacy and the extendability and the types of literal financial contracts you can create within these eCash mints. And we should want and aggressively foster that innovation to update the banking system, literally the back end of the banking system, which is still running on COBOL, which was created in the 70s. And I think I am optimistic about it, because whether it's Cashew, Fedi Mints, it is a return to an idea that was tried in the late 80s, early 90s, and just failed because of the technical hurdles that existed and the permission system that it had to interact with. And I think we're reapproaching the idea of eCash with a stronger, more approachable, and a foundation that is actually viable for having this technology proliferate.
That foundation being Bitcoin.
Yes.
You know, I didn't say the word. You need to say Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Okay, next question. That was a good question, by the way. Let's keep up the good questions. Yeah, Jordan.
All right, this question is from Dr. Nick Amato in the Bitcoin Veterans Cadre chat, who's watching live right now.
Nice.
Does OpenSats plan on taking applications for open source mining projects?
Yes, we already support BitX. Scott is awesome. And I think we support a couple other contributors that are focused on open source mining. So opensats.org/apply. Hopefully the 256 Foundation will start picking up the slack now that they found a block. And they will also start funding more initiatives. But to be quite clear, OpenSats is the largest funder of open source Bitcoin mining initiatives in the world. So we got that going for us right now. No, we don't need to clap. Please don't clap.
I think somebody would take umbrage with that.
With what? Oh, block?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're both funded by Jack Dorsey, though. So Jack is one of the leaders in open source Bitcoin mining funding. So shout out to you, Jack. Thank you. But yeah, no, Block is doing a lot of work here. And we do have multiple members of their team here, which is awesome. I think there's going to be some big news at some point. This is like a Justin Sun pre-announcement in terms of Block and open source mining and BitX. And it's going to be good. Okay, next question. Good question only.
Well, I hope it's a good question.
You got this.
Yeah. Since we're talking about freedom mining, why isn't there too much public support for Samurai wallet developers?
What is 2 months of?
Too much.
Too much.
Why isn't there too much public support from the community for Samurai wallet developers?
You know, I think, first of all, it's important to look at the positives. There has been a lot of support for the Samurai Defense Fund run out of Bitcoin Policy Institute. So p2prights.org, you can go there to donate. Is it enough? No. Is it ever really going to be enough? Probably no. But more helps. I think nearly $1 million has been raised, and that number might not be public, and I'm maybe not supposed to share that, but that's awesome to see. I think, you know, there is a bit of a chilling effect. You know, I think it's a very sensitive topic. I think most people do not want to have the DOJ throwing them in a gulag. And as a result, a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about it. But I will say that privately, and you know, that's an unfortunate reality, and we need more people to be public and outspoken about it. And I do see Econo Alchemist here, who's quite loud about it, basically just short of posting in all caps. But besides that, he's probably the loudest person in the world about that defensive fund. I would like to see more support. We haven't seen that much corporate support. A lot of it has been just individuals. You know, you just see like random two Bitcoin donations come in. Like people just like throw $200K into the fund anonymously, because you can donate anonymously with Bitcoin or you can get a tax credit. But yeah, I don't know, Marty, you got anything else to add here?
It's not specific to the Samurai case, but hopefully it sort of extends to it. But I don't know if you saw the headline yesterday, but the EFF came out with vocal and financial support for Roman Storm, with the
Tornado Cash.
With the Tornado Cash thing. And I think the EFF coming out and doing that. Is it the Electronic Frontier Fund? What is it?
Foundation, yes.
Foundation. Electronic Frontier Foundation.
There you go.
And historically, like, they've been on the tip of the spear. I think they've gone back and forth of...
they're one of the OG internet freedom nonprofits and advocacy groups. So it's good to see them dipping their toe in. I will say that this is something that the shit corners have done much better than us. The shit corners have very much rallied behind their privacy developers, where we don't see that as much in the Bitcoin space. But once again, I think they got arrested in March.
April 24th.
April, yeah, the day that 11 infamy. You asked me in April what the outlook was, or even May or June. It was pretty bad. And you look now and it's a lot better. So vibes are cautiously optimistic, and we need to keep attention on it. We need to keep support there. And we'll see how this unfolds. It's probably going to be a longer process rather than a short one. Next question. That was a good question. Next question. We're rating questions here. Rod, you're not allowed to ask questions. Anyone but Rod. Make sure.
Where's John Stephanopoulos?
No one passed the mic to Rod.
George Stephanopoulos is here?
John.
Future bit. He walked out after I gave him the future bit promo. Future, is it futurebit.com or .io? Futurebit.io. You can go solo mine today and you will also find a block. It's guaranteed, just like yesterday. Next question. We got to have more questions here. We have a full house.
There's, we got one in the back.
400 people in the room right now.
You guys want to riff on the mining pool centralization issue?
Oh, this is great. We have Foundry here.
Ooh.
I don't know if they're in the room. there's Mike over there. We actually solved mining centralization because we found a block yesterday. So the debate is settled. I think... look, I think it's good that Bitcoiners are always aware and concerned and seeking to improve mining distribution. But it's also important to have a little bit of perspective. And throughout the years, mining centralization has actually been a lot worse. There was a company at one point called GHash that had over 50% of mining hash rate, and they weren't just the pool, they were also the miner themselves. Technically, individuals owned hash rate, but they operated everything and the pool. And it was so bad, perceived so bad in the community, that Peter Todd famously posted on Reddit and said he sold half of his Bitcoin and that the Bitcoin project was dead. So it's been a lot worse. I don't know if that makes people feel better or not. It has been a lot worse. The second piece I would say is how it's currently playing out right now. Is you have like the Ant Pool Mafia, where you have like a bunch of different mining pools that are using Ant Pool in the background to actually construct their blocks and manage payouts. And then you have Foundry. Those are the two big dogs. And they're kind of in like a tete-a-tete. You know, they're like, they're a bit of a Mexican standoff, and they're holding each other in check. So it's funny because like Bitcoin X, you know, one week they're like, oh, Ant Pool's the devil. And then the next week they're like, Foundry's the devil. But the beautiful thing is that because we have both of them, they're buying us some time and they hold each other in check. And then the last thing I would add is different initiatives like FutureBit and Ocean with their Datum are trying to push forward this idea of individual miners and Stratum V2. Individual miners constructing their blocks and choosing which transactions are in a block, because ultimately that's the core, that's the core of the fundamental concern, which is protocol level censorship. This idea that certain transactions will not get included in blocks, and so
who will include those transactions in the block. And if you have more people actually constructing those blocks and choosing which transactions are in it, then it's less likely that you see a protocol-wide ban on any given transaction, which we have never seen to date, which is fucking amazing. And Bitcoin doesn't get enough credit for it, that there hasn't been a single transaction that hasn't been able to reach a block.
Yeah. And I think on the positive, optimistic side, the industry understands that this problem exists. And I think over the last year specifically, we've really honed in on what the core of the problem is, the payout scheme in FPPS. And I think since the problem has been made very aware to the industry, particularly over the last 9 months, people are really leaning into how to create a solution at the payout level. Obviously, Ocean's bringing back PPLNS, and I don't think there's anything I can disclose publicly, but there are people really trying to innovate on the payout scheme layer, which is the natural sort of incentive that's driven this centralization, particularly on the AMPool side, where due to the payout structure, miners need to, or other pools need to proxy in the AMPool to leverage their treasury to make sure they can pay out their customers, which has given AMPool incredible leverage over other pools in the space. And I think we are aware of the problem and people are working on solutions, which is important.
Marty was really disappointed at me because I didn't ask Governor Lee his opinion on FPPS, but that will have to go for another conversation. And I would just add on top of this, and it's not just because Mike is sitting like 6 feet away from me. I do think Foundry is good actors. We shouldn't rest on that. But their history has shown that they're incredibly benevolent actors in the space. Out of all the people that could be running such a large pool, I'm glad it is Foundry. And hopefully as an industry, we can move to a better, more long-term sustainable solution.
I mean, that's the history of mining pools, whether it's GS or Foundry. In a funny way, they're victims of their own success. They run such a good business that, it's an evolving thing. And, I forget who said it on the earlier, it was Rafa, during his conversation with Grant. You always had the fallback option to change where you're pointing your hash rate. I mean, that ability to exit pretty trivially on the mining side, on the hashing side, is always there. And as long as that is preserved, I think it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay, freaks. Next question. That was another good question. I rate that like 8 of 10. Should we get into questions?
We're rating questions now.
Rod, we have like 10 more minutes, right? We have 20 more minutes, Rod told us. Next question. No, we can't. No repeat question. You can. We'll bring you back in a second if someone else doesn't have a question. Does no one else have a? Okay, let's go to the repeat question. You guys, come on, guys. Think of a question.
It's not a repeat. I just want to push back a little bit. Have you seen ZeroXB10C's report on?
He's awesome.
OFAC sanctions. There was another mining pool trying to do OFAC sanctions again.
F2 pool.
Thoughts on that?
Well, first of all,
Wang Chun, come on, dude.
OpenSats funds OXB10C. I don't know. We fund him. He's awesome. I didn't look at this report. Did you look at this report?
I did not dive into it, but yeah, I it was.
But the transactions were still included. It was just a single. Did he just say F2 pool? It was like a single pool.
It's like a probabilistic analysis of transactions in the mempool.
Like they should have been included, but they weren't. Yeah. But then they eventually, I think, got included in a block, right? Someone else mined them a little bit later. I think it's cool because it's like kind of like an early warning detection system, right? Which is helpful, so we can provide pressure before it hits critical mass. I will say, if I was running a public mining pool, like I would not include sanctioned transactions in my blocks, and that's probably fine for the entire protocol to handle that. Other miners will probably include that. People don't want to go to jail. I think that's completely reasonable if you're running a business. My point earlier was that Bitcoin's been around now. I don't like doing math.
16
years. 16 years. 16 years, and there's never been the case where a transaction hasn't eventually gotten confirmed, which is pretty crazy. Like, that is, like, people literally, as this conversation has been going on, like, a million people got removed from PayPal, like, over the last hour. So I just think people don't, that's not an exact stat. I have no idea how many people got removed from PayPal. But my point stands that compared to conventional money systems or traditional money systems, like, Bitcoin is just a huge, huge, huge step improvement.
Yeah. And bringing it back to the question that was asked earlier about things we should focus on over the next 4 years, go pedal to the metal with, let's abolish the Bank Secrecy Act. We won't have to talk about any of this bullshit.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, frame the narrative around there. Financial privacy is not a good thing. The right to transact should be a human right. And the governments and law enforcement agencies simply need to be better at their jobs. You do not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I think it's like a future crime thing, or like Minority Report or 1984 thought police, right? It's like trying to police people before a crime gets committed instead of, you know, good old fashioned police work afterwards. But I think the Bank Secrecy Act actually, it's within sight. Like, we might actually repeal that thing. Like, that's crazy to think about. Like, I mean, I don't think it's a massive, whatever percentage I put on, like, I don't know, under 10%, but still highest it's ever been in my lifetime or our lifetimes.
Yeah. It is truly antiquated and ineffective at its stated goals.
Sorry.
I was going to say, I want to go, like, there's like monetary limits that were baked into the bill back in the 70s that are, due to inflation, so minuscule that it is creating an incredible burden on financial firms, banks, individual
It's not
companies.
Effective. Criminals get around it anyway. It just hurts. It hurts honest people. Okay, next question. We got a repeat question over here.
Do you want me to change my voice?
No, the question is, you know, given the vibes being high, I didn't want to make a repeat for you with the same voice or whatever. But with vibes being high, with things trending in the right direction, you know, maybe you're a Bitcoiner that is not a dev or a miner or anything like that. What are other ways that you see Bitcoiners having a positive impact on their local community? Like, what are the things that you can see that day-to-day people can do to just be a better, like, human to their community, but represent that, like, as a Bitcoiner using this unlocked time that they have, you know, due to staying humble and stacking sats?
Let me just be there. I think a lot of us, myself included, have learned, like, you don't want to be the overbearing, like, shaking people by the shoulders, like, you need to get into Bitcoin, it's all going away. Just be there as a resource and make it known that you're there to be a resource when, if and when the curiosity is stoked in any individual in your community. And I think lead by an example. If you own a local business, maybe you don't make Bitcoin front and center, but you create an option for people to interact with it in some way. Maybe that is the thing that stokes the curiosity that leads to somebody wanting to learn more about Bitcoin. And then if you're involved in local politics, like, really pushing the local political apparatus to seriously consider incorporating Bitcoin in one way or another.
You should go door to door and give everybody the Bitcoin standard. Just a little speech.
Are the Jehovah's Witnesses successful in that? They're still doing it. So
they must find some success, right?
they have to go to heaven.
Don't do that though. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, Marty's right. Just be a good neighbor, right? Be a good neighbor. I think a lot of this, you know, people, the meme is always Bitcoin fixes this, right? And I think every good meme is some basis in reality. But I don't think necessarily, like, Bitcoin, the protocol, fixes things. I think it's a tool, and I think people fix things, right? And so Bitcoin is one of many tools that empowers individuals. And I think from a grassroots point of view, it can empower local communities and make strong local communities. And we start from there, and that's really actionable and really substantive. And it doesn't matter what your skill sets are. Like, you could be a plumber and you can be very effective in that role. So I would just be a good neighbor and help out. Next question.
7 out of 10. I'll give that 7 out of 10.
What?
We're rating questions, right?
Oh, was that a 7 out of 10?
I guess 7.
I think that was a 9 out of 10. That was a 9 out of 10 question. Be the change you want to see in the world. Thank you, Gary.
I'm kidding.
All right. Controversial hot topics.
Woo! Okay.
Quantum computing.
Oh, my God.
Was that a question? Okay. You put a question.
It's funny because I don't think it's controversial and it shouldn't be a hot topic. It's, I don't know. It's, we've discussed this so many times throughout the years. Quantum computing, if and when it does ever materialize, and I question whether it actually at scale just due to the immense amount of energy necessary to make it possible, based off of conversations I've had with physicists. they're going to
wow, you know physicists.
They're going to attack. They're gonna attack everything. Like if it's a problem for Bitcoin when quantum comes, it's gonna, like we have bigger problems. Not worried about it. And I think actually Bitcoin is more uniquely suited to protect its network from quantum because the developers working on it have a monetary incentive to make sure that it is protected. I think the incentives are such that Bitcoin would actually be the most robust system in the world against a quantum attack just due to that incentive that exists.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also not very concerned about it. I think it could be a concern in a decade or so. There's different ways we can mitigate it and make Bitcoin more resistant to quantum style attacks. There's really not too much motivation to push through those kind of changes now. Some of them don't even require soft forks, which is good. Usually you don't want to see soft forks. They can be like opt-in. People can choose whether or not they want to go to a quantum resistant type of wallet structure. But as Marty said, like the foundational elements of like the internet and global commerce rely on hashing algorithms that are less resistant than the ones that Bitcoin uses. So those will probably break first. If anything, Bitcoin is actually kind of an interesting alarm bell because there a lot of the early addresses weren't hashed. So if we see like super old addresses, large movements from super old addresses, it could be proof and sign that there's a quantum situation happening. One of the theories that people have had, because I'm a big sci-fi nut, so I get all my quantum information from sci-fi, not physicists, sci-fi books. And one of the big fears was that like some like super group that's like super genius in China or something would figure out how to do it, and then they would covertly attack things throughout the world without letting everyone else know. Well, Bitcoin's this massive honeypot that if they did it, it would be very visible, and it'd be very hard for someone to not try to do it, given the situation. So I think Bitcoin actually improves the situation and improves the status quo, but yeah. I mean, since we've been in Bitcoin, people have... Vitalik's first scam was... using quantum to make super Bitcoin miners before Ethereum.
Yeah, when he couldn't raise money for that, he went and launched Ethereum.
Yeah, so it's been part of the fear hype cycle for a while, and at this point, I'm a little bit disillusioned by it all. Oh yeah, John, is John in here? John, raise your hand. Oh, look, John's in the back. No, he's not here. John Arnold from our team at 1031 wrote a great piece on quantum. And we had a lot of incredibly qualified people give him feedback on that piece before it was published. And you can find that at 1031.vc. That's T-E-N, numbers 31.vc.
/insights/quantum.
You just go to the webpage and click blog or insights or whatever. Okay, next question. That question was like a 3 of 10.
Thanks, freaks. So we had an earlier panel that discussed like the hash rate explosion that's happening right now. Do you see an environment where we have stagnation in hash rate? You know, just based on the fact that, you know, hash rate grows because we have the infrastructure in place and power generation that's available right now. But do you see an environment where we can, you know, get outbid by data centers, you know, AI infrastructure, and we actually see a stagnation? You already see Riot and all these other companies start to pivot to AI. Just kind of want to know what your thoughts are on that.
I guess hash price would determine that, right? It's maybe for a period of time, but if the price rips and difficulty and overall network hash rate stagnates for a time, like the economic incentive will be there to unplug things that you're using electricity for and plug in ASICs. So it could be temporary periods of stagnation, but then you also have to think like the efficiency of the chips, the changing of the form factors, like the ability to get more hash rate out of the same amount of electricity, I think is going to increase for a period of time. So
yeah, like even if the energy usage stagnates, it doesn't mean hash rate stagnates because they can be much more efficient. I think, look, maybe long tail, you're talking like long tail Bitcoin adoption, similar to how you think about like Bitcoin price. Like I think Bitcoin price is accelerating at this point in the adoption cycle because most people don't own Bitcoin yet. But at some point, it's going to stabilize and we're going to hit a point where Bitcoin price continues to increase in purchasing power. You can still buy more stake or afford a nicer car or nicer house if you hold and save in Bitcoin. But the magnitude of those increases over time will be reduced with adoption. We'll probably see something similar in terms of mining.
Drew Bunsell's called it. It's Nakamoto's point once you reach that point.
Well, he like came up with the term. But anyway, I love Deruv. My point is, though, is that if you're running a Bitcoin mining business or even if you're mining as an individual, you should just assume that hash rate is just going to go through the roof constantly because that's what it has done historically and will probably continue doing for the near future. It's a proper free market. Like anyone anywhere in the world can plug in computers, can plug in miners, and they can join the rat race that is Bitcoin mining. And as a result, it's incredibly competitive. And that chart is just the single most bullish chart. Not if you're a miner, the single most bullish chart in Bitcoin is that hash rate chart.
And honestly, if you're a miner, that's the best risk-adjusted assumption to make, because if you're wrong, you're just more profitable.
Yeah, then it's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Two more questions. Where's the mic?
Over here.
We got a fresh face over here.
Hey, I was going to ask
BZ.
What do you guys think about transaction fees? So I think we're back at 1 sat per V-byte. Ooh. Should we be concerned about the miner subsidy long term? And when you think about layer two scaling solutions, some of the other competing ideas out there, all of these things would likely result in less transaction fee pressure. Same with ETFs, all of these things. So are you concerned about it? How do you think about it? That's my question.
Not concerned. Again, like you said, first of all, we're in the very early days of global Bitcoin adoption. So I think using historical activity, on-chain activity, particularly to try to project fees in the future is a fool's errand. And I think second layer solutions, whether it's Lightning, Arc, I mean, they all at the end of the day have to settle at some point back to the main chain. And going back to what we were just saying, like the network has the difficulty adjustment for a reason. So I think if the fee market doesn't develop, becomes unprofitable, you're going to have miners unplug, block slowdown, congestion, all that stuff.
I mean, I personally think we're going to hit a sustained high fee transaction fee market at some point in the future. Might have called it a little bit too early. It depends if you listen to the old tapes or not, but I think we will hit it at some point. I think this is a good thing. I think what effectively happened was we had a lot of on-chain activity, probably mostly spam related. One man's spam is another man's transaction, but mostly malicious in 2017 around the fork wars. And then we implemented SegWit, which came with its own block size increase and enabled Lightning. And so as a result, I think we have more room to grow than maybe a lot of people speculated. And if you think about individual parties that transact on chain, you know, I'm not a chain surveillance firm, but my guess is it's probably in like the low millions. Like there's probably not that many entities that are actually transacting on chain right now because we're so early in adoption. So it gives us breathing room. while we figure out the tooling, while we figure out all this shit. But eventually, at some point, as adoption increases, I expect on-chain activity, which is a truly scarce, it's scarce space, right? Like there's only so much block space to go around for the entire world to use this as the base of a global financial system. I think what'll probably happen is we'll end up in a situation where we did not take advantage of all this wiggle room and time, and pressure will mount, and at that point we'll start to have better tooling. But what people should take advantage of it now. While you have it now, you know, transaction fees are incredibly cheap. Get your UTXOs in order, get your tooling in order, figure out all this stuff. And similar to my comment on hash rate, you should effectively be operating under the assumption that at any point transaction fees could run away from you and might not come back down. Make sure your business will still be solvent in that situation. Make sure your family will still be solvent in that situation. And if you're wrong about that assumption, then it's great. You have cheap transaction fees. And if you're right, then you're prepared. So you're in the best of both worlds. And then last piece is, obviously, we still have the miner subsidy without the transaction fees. I don't know if you guys were aware, but we did find a block here yesterday. And like that block was, you know, $300,000 worth of Bitcoin. So even though the block reward, even though that subsidy is going down every halving, if you look at it in terms of purchasing power, how much stake you can buy, how many houses you can buy, how many warehouses you can buy, how many countries you can buy, it's going up. It's going up and to the right as the halving happens. So I'm really not concerned at all on that front.
Neither way.
That question was an 8.5 out of 10. Last question.
So I don't get to talk to a panel of physicists very often. So what's your thought on the shrinking die size with miners? How much more efficiency do you think we can get? Like,
in terms of the nanometers at the silicon level?
Yeah. We're like 3 nanometers now. So
didn't Bitmain come out and say they were working on 2 nanometer last year?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go below zero. So, and I'm not an expert on
physicist.
Somebody who's conversed with physicists before. It feels like we've been reaching those limitations, or it has felt like we've been getting close to those limitations. People are like, you can't go to 3, you can't go to 2, but it's still going. So I don't know. I guess don't short the potential for people to figure out how to do more with less at the silicon level. But you can't go below zero. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an answer. That was a 10 of 10 question, though. All right, guys, thank you for joining us. This was wonderful.
Peace and love, freaks.
Stay humble, stack sets.